TV.
You know, one of the greatest things about this show is the family that we are. We are a family together. And we can agree vociferously, and we can vociferously disagree. And we're united by the mind of Christ. And it just feels so intimate, the relationship that we have. And I love it. And I love coming here with you and discussing these things of consequence. So Christopher wrote back. If you haven't seen his response, I'm just going to read part of it. It is really mature and loving and kind. And I just couldn't have been happier to read it. And then Robert Lakey has a funny comment giving Christopher some encouragement about coming up against Martin Zender. It's all very familial and jolly, and I wish we could all just, you know, tip a glass of wine together. But the closest we're going to get in this eon, besides a conference, and rumor has it, there's going to be another conference in Kansas City in May. I'll be bringing you up to speed on that. But until that happens, we can gather around this electronic medium and enjoy each other's company. I am Martin Zender, the world's most outspoken Bible scholar, remaining so, voted so by unanimous decision, and you're at MZ TV. And again, I am so happy you're here and that we have this family to rely on. I want to read, I'm going to continue on with Christopher's verses. And he admitted that perhaps, you know, the word stated, these verses state, he said. He said, these verses I'm listing state that God does not need to direct every little thing. But of course, you and I know that's not true. But before I get back into that, I want to read a comment by Robert Lakey. He's encouraging Christopher. This is really good. Robert says, hey, Christopher, don't get too offended. Martin will laugh and try to make you feel stupid anytime your view differs from his. He has done it to me several times. That is true. If there is a sport, a real sport on this channel, it is Robert Lakey. I love Robert Lakey. I met him at the Kansas City conference. I hope to see him again. Yeah, great guy. He's really put up with some stuff from me, and I put up with some things from him, but he never tries to upset me. He just puts forward some scriptural views that I think are untenable, and of course, I don't have any problem stating as much, but Robert appreciates the honesty. He goes on here, let me repeat this because it's so delightful to me. Martin will laugh and try to make you feel stupid anytime. But the thing is, I really don't try to make anyone feel stupid. I have this unique skill of presenting facts in such a way that the facts make people feel stupid. I try to let the scriptures make people feel stupid instead of me doing it. I kind of use the scriptures for my diabolical purpose. But the purpose is not to make the other person feels stupid. It's to bring enlightenment to people who hold what I believe to be an inherently stupid viewpoint. See, I can't help myself. There I go again. Martin will laugh. Hang in there, Christopher. Martin will laugh and try to make you feel stupid anytime your view differs from his. He has done it to me several times. That's just Martin. Thank you for that, Robert. That's just Martin, and I like that he is that certain in his views. Thank you for that, Robert Lakey. Robert goes on to say, before I quote from Christopher, who responded instantly, what a sport Christopher is too. I found out I slaughtered his last name, but we'll be getting to that, and then we're going to go to the scriptures, of course. Robert continues, as for free will, there is no phrase free will in all of scripture. But this still does not convince Robert. Or see, Robert is actually on Christopher's side. This does not convince Robert that free will doesn't exist. In fact, Robert believes in free will. Here we go. In my view, since God is sovereign, he could create humans with free will if he wanted, because, quote, all things are possible with God, unquote. Robert asks, then, did he? In other words, did God create humans with a free will, since God can do anything? His answer is sort of. As I see it, God gives humans free will, unrestricted choice, which may even surprise him. See, here's another person who believes that God could be surprised. And you know what my head wants to do right now. But I have such a nice thing going on with my hair that I'm going to take a deep breath and continue. With one huge exception. So God makes people who can do things that would even surprise him. Okay, with one huge exception, he did not give his creation free will over their final destiny. See, this is a complete, I'm sorry, Robert, here I go again. It's a complete and total contradiction that he reserved for himself. What did he reserve for himself? Their final destiny. But their final destiny cannot be assured if God has truly given anyone a free will, because they could then use that free will to decide not to acquiesce to God's plan. It is a contradiction. But Robert gets out of this obvious contradiction by saying that all things are possible with God. That is not true. Let me say, this is an important point. I'm glad Robert wrote this. All things are not possible with God. That's right. And when somebody asks you, can God do anything? It's a trap. Can God do anything? Do not answer yes to that question, because that will then lead them to say, can God make a rock so big that he can't lift it? You know, a real contradiction. And since you just answered yes to the question, can God do anything? You have fallen into the trap. So whenever anybody asks you, a doubter, an atheist, can God do anything? Look at them strangely. Like I just look at them like, no, of course he can't. Boom. They're on their heels. You're in control of the conversation. And you have spoken the truth. There are two things God cannot do. And you can quote me. God cannot lie and he cannot contradict himself. It's impossible for God to lie. So God can't lie. That's he can't do it. And he can't contradict himself. God is not a walking contradiction. And a contradiction would be giving people free will and yet being able to control the final destiny of people at the same time. This is a desperate attempt. And I've seen this many, many, many times over the decades that I've been doing this kind of work. It is a desperate attempt to have your cake and eat it too. You want to say that God will get what he wants in the end. You really want to say that you want that to happen because it sounds so good and it's true. God gets his way in the end, but you desperately also, which is Robert's case, he desperately wants that a bit of freedom. And so does Christopher. They simply can't understand how God would want to control everything, but God has to control everything. Devolve to a philosophical conversation, because we have Acts 17:25. God gives to all life and breath and all. Robert doesn't believe that, and Christopher doesn't believe it. That's the end of the conversation. God gives to all life and breath and all. And Robert might come back with, if God gives all to all, then God could give people a free will. But then there's the contradiction part. The contradiction is that if somebody truly had a free will, which is, as Robert himself describes here, unrestricted choice, which may even surprise him, unrestricted, then that person could deny the role that God wishes them to fulfill in the, quote, final destiny arrangement. And so it is a complete contradiction. No one has free will. God is operating all things according to the counsel of his will. God's the potter, is humanity, and humanity is the clay. Neither of these gentlemen believe, Romans 9, that God's the potter and humanity is the clay. It's just another simple analogy. But philosophy is so tempting, it's so juicy, and it calls to these men, and it calls to many, many other people. These men are like not the only ones, of course. philosophy is very strong. It offends the human deep down that God could be controlling everything. But God does control everything because God gives to all life and breath and all, and God is the potter, humanity is the clay. This is so simple. And we will see that Christopher puts up the objection that, well, yeah, it would make everyone automatons, or God needs unforced love, or it's not true love. And that's another philosophical idea, a philosophical point. It's just not true. God must cause the love that comes back to him. Why? Because God gives to all life and breath and all. All you got to do, for all you 8-year-olds out there, and those like me with an 8-year-old mind, and I'm saying 8-year-old in the best possible sense, all you people with the mind of a child, I'm addressing you. Anyone who hates human philosophy, hates their own opinions, who wants to know the mind of God, simply believe the freaking scriptures. Acts 17:25, God gives to all life and breath and all. In other words, God gives everybody everything. He gives them, do they have love? Then God gave it to them. Do they have faith? God gave them to them. Christopher believes that everybody is built in with faith, that they're able to do their own thing with their own faith. God gave people faith. A corroborating verse is Romans 12:3. God gives to each the measure of faith. It's all God. Oh, the philosophers don't like it. It's all God, gentlemen. It is all God. And yet, the human is desperate for some measure of freedom. The human thinks that God would have to be a despot in order to control everything. God is a despot, for Christ's sake. He is one, but he's a benign despot. I mean, again, for the 8-year-olds out there, you'll understand me. Robert might not understand me. Christopher might not understand me, but for the 8-year-olds out there, like myself, it's simply believing, besides Acts 17:25, it's believing Romans chapter 9. God is the potter, humanity is the clay. I've told you other time, I take a piece of Play-Doh to a conference. I slap a piece of Play-Doh on the podium, and I step away, and I say, I'm going to now leave the room, clay, piece of Play-Doh, and I will give you 5 minutes to make yourself into something. And I've given you an unrestricted, untrammeled will and intention to make yourself whatever you want. You can choose to have faith in me. You can choose to love me. You can choose to fashion yourself into a beautiful vase or an ashtray, whatever you wish. I'll be back in 5 minutes and let's see how far you've come. An actual piece of clay, a lump of dirt mixed with water, in this case, Play-Doh. Of course, the audience gets it by that time. Because I stand there with my arms folded for an uncomfortable amount of time, an awkward amount of time. I step away even more. I walk away maybe 15 yards. And we all sit there looking at the clay. It's very awkward, like this. Soon there are titters of amusement in the audience. They get it. I say I could leave for 5 minutes, 5 days, 5 weeks, or 5,000 years, and that clay will not move apart from an animating force. God, I wonder if there's a verse that actually says that. Wouldn't that be amazing? Romans 9. God has the right over the clay to make vessels of honor and dishonor. And yet, I still have people telling me that they feel uncomfortable. You're making us all automatons. You're making us robots. We're not robots. My answer is, you're giving yourself too much credit. You're correct. You're not a robot. You're a lump of clay. Then the objection comes, I'm not a lump of clay, I'm a human being. Look at that piece of Play-Doh you put on the podium, Martin Zenner. Does that look like me? I have thoughts, I have a heart. I have desires. I'm in a collection of intricate systems. I'm an amazing creature. Oh, yes, you are all those things. I say, you are not a literal lump of clay, although the argument could be made that you are. Humanity is actually made of every single element. Should I say it this way? Every single element of humanity can be traced to the soil. So you are actually literal clay. But I have thoughts. I have hopes. I have dreams. I have a soul. Okay, so you do. But you're missing the analogy of Romans chapter 9. God is analogizing human beings with clay, and he's comparing himself to a potter. The message of Romans 9 is this, that a human being with a mind and with complex thoughts, emotions, and a soul is just as pliable, just as dead without outside influence, as is a piece of clay. In other words, God can manipulate a human being and all his or her intricate systems. God can manipulate a human being. And God does manipulate human beings as easily as a potter manipulates clay. And in the process of the potter manipulating the clay, there is no participation of the clay. This is an analogy. It's a metaphor. Follow it. Follow it. Does the clay participate in any way? Does the clay think one way or another about what's happening to it? Does the clay have a say? Does the potter at any time literally talk to the clay? Excuse me, clay, do you mind if I do this? Does the potter step away and say, okay, clay, since you have, as Robert says, unrestricted choice? Can you imagine applying these ridiculous statements to a piece of clay? Unrestricted choice, which may even surprise him. This is what Robert Lakey believes. The people have unrestricted choices, which may even surprise God, the potter. Follow the analogy. Go to Romans 9. If you can believe it, if you're 8 years old or under, or you have the mind of an 8-year-old like I do, picture a potter walking away and then coming back, and the potter has made the clay into a vase. But he hasn't finished yet. He goes to take a dinner break. He comes back, and the clay on the wheel has turned itself into an ashtray. Whoa, what the hell happened here? Says the potter. If you found that analogy to be stupid, and it is, then imagining that humanity has unrestricted choices, which may even surprise God, is equally as stupid. It's pure, sickening, nauseating, despicable philosophy. Desperate attempt by the human to secure some little bit of pride. Give us something. Do you know what you have? One who is blissfully ignorant of what must occur in the next moment. Because, ladies and gentlemen, God wrote the entire script before any of us were born. The script of our lives and the script of the eons. Here's another verse for you. Isaiah 46:10. God tells the end from the beginning. It is all set in concrete. Every single motion, every single scratch, every single bit of dialogue, every single cough, every single piss, every single breath. God gives to all life and breath and all. I keep going back to that. Was scripted by God. Period. Once you understand that, human free will becomes a dirty joke that can only be laughed at. And then the desperate attempt to at least get some little bit of control. Okay, we'll admit that God gets everything in the end, but you can't tell me that we can't have a little control in the middle. No, you can't. Follow it through. Does the clay have any little control in the middle of the process? In between the time it's thrown on the wheel and the finished product comes off the wheel? Absolutely not. It's a joke. Nobody thinks that a potter walks away from the clay, comes back, and is surprised. And yet, that's what our friend Robert is forwarding here. Of course, he says it's only his opinion. Thank God he said that, because that's all it is. It's an opinion. It's incorrect. But it's his opinion. He's allowed to say his opinion. Everybody's allowed to say their opinion on my show. And just to reiterate, I don't delete comments. Everybody's allowed to give their opinion. Christopher gave his opinion. Oh, my friends, come to this truth like a child. That's the only way you're going to get it. Drop the pride. Drop the desperation. Clearly, you're desperate. Clearly, showing desperation here. The contradiction that, well, of course I believe God gets everything in the end, but he doesn't have to dictate every little bit of the process. Can you say that of a potter and the clay? If you can't say it of the potter and the clay, the inspired analogy of God's control of the human race, then you can't say it of God and humans. That's your litmus test. That's the hard test. Can your theory sustain the potter and the clay? If it can't, you're screwed. You're done. You're finished. Thank you for your opinion, but here's a home version of the game. Thanks for showing up. No. No. And it's so simple. I'm not a robot. No, you're not. You're clay. I'm not a puppet. No, you're not. You're clay. I'm not an automaton. No, you're clay. Okay, you're clay. But I'm not clay. That's the analogy. Of course, you're not literally a piece of clay, but the analogy is God works you. He works you. He gives everything to you every moment like a potter does to the clay. Can I possibly overstate or go over this great passage of Romans chapter 9, the great unbelieved passage even by these mature men of God? They still don't believe it. How much more do I have to do? How much more convincing must I embark upon to break through the philosophy that even infects people who have been reading scriptures for decades? I was about to say, I don't get it. But I do. Free will dies hard. It's one of the last things to go. Let's read Christopher. Love this guy. I love Robert Lakey. I love Christopher. These men, they're all part of our family. Oh, I'm just looking down. I see a post from our friend Jennifer, JKC, good old JK. Listen to this. When I finally realized after thousands of hours of critical thinking regarding the way the world works and all the synchronization and also all the chaos, that there's no way that an intelligent, sovereign creator would leave, never mind could leave, his universe up to chance to give man some free will. It's literally impossible when you really sit down and think about it. At first, it was hard to accept because I bought into the robot argument. And then reading Romans helped me grasp that I am clay, not the potter. And now it's a true comfort to me that I am not in control, not ultimately responsible for myself, since God is willing and working all things to the counsel of his own will, declaring the end from the beginning. History has already been written. Damn, somebody needlepoint that, frame it, and put it on the wall. That was inspired, JK. This is a woman with the mind of an 8-year-old, with a child, coming to the scriptures with just pure, unadulterated awe and joy, able to understand the Sunday school lesson of the potter and the clay. Damn, that was beautiful. Thank you for that. Jennifer, thank you. Freaking inspired. Christopher, sweet guy. He starts, it's a very long comment. You can read it in yesterday's post. I love this guy. Because, man, I was a little bit critical, and yet a family sticks together. This is the way it's done. The way Robert and I do it. The way I've done it with others. The only guy I can think of now who doesn't do it is Clyde, because he's refused to discuss, to listen, to consider criticism. Robert, he's a real man. He can sustain it. And he winks. He knows Zender. He knows me. I met the man. We had tears in our eyes as we embraced after many arguments we've had, but we respect each other. And I can tell right away that Christopher is a man of this ilk as well. He says, sorry about this comment. It turned out much longer than I worked out in my mind while driving this morning. I can't read the whole comment. It's too long. It was a beautiful thing, though, but it's riddled with philosophy. I'll point it out tomorrow. Look at my time. There's still those 15 verses that I'm going to get to without having looked at them. Haven't looked at any of them still. Good morning, Martin, whom, for my part, I still consider my brother in the Lord and friend. Thank you, Christopher. Thank you for your response. He's thanking me. He's thanking me for criticizing his position. You got to love that. I am humbled that you would consider my comment worthy to take up 30 minutes of your public ministry rather than only private time. This was unexpected. And apparently you may give some more time. Really, you are too kind. What a beautiful, teachable soul, right? He's thanking me for taking the time to read his letters. I consider criticism, folks. Yes, I am kind of contrasting myself with others in the body of Christ. I'm up for it. You can criticize me. You can tell me if you think I'm wrong, like Christopher did. I think you're wrong about free will, Martin. And we'll look at the scriptures together. That's what a family does. Secondly, while I am an English geek, I don't always say things as concisely in comments that I would in a paper. This guy's intelligent. This guy is an intellectual, you can tell. You are correct that states, remember he said, these verses state that God does not dictate everything, in his opinion. You are correct that states is not the best term. The word states can mean connotes rather than the notes. Not sure I understand that, but that's on me. But that being said, I accept your correction for the sake of all clarity possible. We are attempting to rightly divide the word of truth, which means hermeneutics. I don't even know what hermeneutics is. I went to high school with a guy named Herman Newicks, but this might not be him. Like I say, eight-year-olds don't understand these technical words. Hermeneutics is needed where things like possible anthropomorphia is used. I am proud to use the word anthropomorphia. I learned that word being a figure of speech where God comes across as a man, and I do use it proudly. Thirdly, yes, you butchered my last name. This is funny, and I apologize. Everybody does. If I recognize it, I answer to it. If anybody cares, it is pronounced Alsrue, Christopher Alsrue. I will pronounce it correctly from now on. Thank you. Fourthly, you may have given me the best compliment I've ever received in my life, having elephant balls. I said he had the balls of an elephant to come on this channel and say that you, Martin Zender, the world's most outspoken Bible scholar, are wrong about the most major topic that could be discussed in the entirety of Scripture, which is the sovereignty of God. Thank you very much. And so I find myself out of time. Unbelievable. Tomorrow I'm going to show the philosophy in Christopher's response. I'll compare. You'll see immediately how it relates to the philosophy in Mr. Lakey's response. Other people may feel the same way, and so they will get instruction from this. And then I'm going to go through these verses and show you where the three mistakes that are commonly made that makes people think that God is not in control of everything. But Romans 9, Acts 17:25. God is, thankfully, happily, gloriously, in control of everything.